This is the Simon Dell Show, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
Yeah, we want it to be playful. We're quite self-aware with how we communicate with our customers. We know I am not going to run on the assumption that everyone's spending as much time reading the context as they are just looking at the number of reviews.
Welcome to the Simon Dell Show, number episode 49. We are very, very close to the big 50. That we've actually made it this far is a miracle. But we have. So let's enjoy the celebration on the next episode, which hopefully will be a spin cycle episode. We're trying to get the gang together one more time for this year. And we're excited about that. However, this week we have on the show the marketing manager for a company called Taxibox. His name is Joshua Webb. By a sheer, weird, strange of coincidence, he happened to go to the same university as me, not at the same time, some 20 long, depressing years later. But anyway, he went to the same university as me and was actually in the Hall of Residence in the same lane down the round the corner from where I used to live. So there you go, small world. Now, Taxibox are based down in Melbourne. They are a storage company that instead of having the traditional storage sheds, or they do have one of those as well, but they actually bring a box to your house, you load it up, and then they take it away. So that's kind of the difference in Taxibox. Now, the reason they're on the show, not because they're not an Australian company and new and innovative and all those kind of things, but we really, really liked one of their campaigns from a couple of months back. And we talked about it on an earlier episode of The Spin Cycle. And we decided to get Taxibox on the show because, well, that's not quite true. Taxibox insisted that they would be on the show. So they're here. Anyway, we talk about the campaign. We talk about how they got that together. And Josh, whilst he's young, he does have a background in film as well. So we talk a little bit about film in marketing, which is really interesting as well. You'll enjoy Josh. Stay tuned for him. The usual announcements before we get into that, rate and review us on iTunes, please, because yours truly here accidentally deleted all the old ones. Nice one, Simon. One of my proudest moments. The second thing is Gilberto, who is forever whinging that we don't give him enough credit, and God knows he does some hard work for this show. Gilberto is the podcastboss.com. If you're looking to do your own podcast, he is your man. And the third thing is come and talk to me or my business partner, Matt, simondell.com. hello@simondell.com. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, all of them, anywhere that you can think that we might be hanging out. Come and have a chat to us. Anyway, without further ado, let us jump in and meet Joshua Webb. So I'm lucky to have with me this morning a gentleman by the name of Joshua Webb, who is currently down in Melbourne and is the marketing manager for a company called Taxibox. So welcome to the show, Joshua.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Do we go by Joshua or Josh, or what's the preferred name here?
You can go with absolutely either one. In all honesty, I only started moving to Joshua relatively recently when I'm talking to clients. I'm talking to clients on the phone. Every time I say Josh, the first time they think I say George. So it could well be my accent or my phone line, but Joshua just eases that little hurdle for the first one. Either way is fine.
Kind of sounds slightly posher as well.
Yeah, gives an air of gravitas.
All right, now, and the other thing we mentioned just before we started, I'm going to go off on a tangent here, as I tend to do. You and I both went to the same university. Now, I will stress that for everybody listening, we went to the same university at very different times because I'm a lot older than you. I graduated in 1995 and you graduated in 2014?
Yes, that's correct. So, a few years apart.
Just a few years ago, right. Now, that university was the University of Southampton down in Hampshire in the southern part of the UK, for those of you who don't know where Southampton is. Now, the big question that I've got for you, Joshua, is which Hall of Residence you lived in?
So I was in Montefiore. which I think was right. A recent one. Yes.
It was there when I was there because I lived in Connell, like next door. And the Connell Monty kind of animosity was something akin to. I'm just trying to describe. It's like the Wallabies New Zealand. It's that sort of love hate relationship between the two, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty much. That's still running relatively strong, or at least it was when I was there. So yes,
I'm glad to hear that 20 years on, which is really depressing that I've just said 20, that the hatred and the animosity is still there. Question, because again, this will interest nobody else listening to this show, but does Stoneham still exist, or has that fallen down? Because that was the third hall of residence in our little lane.
The name doesn't ring a bell. Could well be that they've just renovated it. But
there was a big tower. There used to be a big tower block.
I believe it's still there. It's just that it's now deemed structurally unsound. So.
That doesn't surprise me. Some of the shit that went on in there. Those are the best parties, the Stoneham parties. Anyway, right, let's get on to this. Okay, so Taxi Box, give us a little bit of a breakdown about who Taxi Box are.
Yeah, absolutely. So Taxi Box, a storage company operating in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane. It started in 2010 by two guys called Ben and Jeremy, originally starting off in Melbourne. Predominantly, it's a mobile self-storage company. So this is where modular storage units are delivered straight to your door. You pack them up, and then we come back and we collect them and keep them in our storage facility until we need them back. So that's the kind of bread and butter of the business. We've also relatively recently opened up a local storage facility down here in Melbourne as well. So that's your more traditional fixed storage units, boats, caravans, etc. So that's the overarching part of the business, but yeah, mobile self-storage is very much the crux of it.
Where do they get the idea from? Obviously that would be easier if I was speaking to them, but do you know their sort of background on that at all?
Yeah, I believe with the first mobile self-storage in Australia, but I believe there's similar running models in America. So a business trip over there for them kind of set the idea in motion to bring it over here.
What was their background prior to that?
So I believe this is a real test of my knowledge of the pair of them, but it was property management and business management between the two of them.
There seems to be a big explosion in storage at the moment, and I can probably count two or three near where I live that are fairly new. Is this, and to be honest with you, that kind of surprises me, because I was under the impression that we as humans are buying less shit and therefore need less storage, but but apparently not. So is it a big thing, the storage business at the moment? Is it a bigger demand, or is it just that there's more players moving into the marketplace?
No, I think it's sort of definitely growing. I think what's essentially suspended on is not necessarily whether we're buying more or less shit, but it's just the size of the properties that we have to contain that shit.
Right.
Diminishing a lot. We're really having to sort of downsize. I think Sydney is potentially the forefront of this in terms of square meters that you're now paying for and the price that you're paying for those square meters. So
yeah.
Taxi Box and our competitors are probably sort of more and more finding that people are using us as almost sort of like second bedrooms, that whereas you used to keep all your clothes in the wardrobe in the second bedroom, now they don't have their second bedroom. So we've had people come in to access their Taxi Boxes purely to just change their outfits and pick up the suits or just the occasional outfits they don't need to have in the home every day.
Right. We'll talk about the specific campaign, the reason that obviously you're talking to us today, in a little bit later. But you've got a background. I see you've obviously got a big interest in film.
Yes,
you did a BA at University of Southampton with film, cinema, video studies. What is it about film that gets you excited? Because obviously film's such an intrinsic part of marketing these days. So is that something that you've kind of, you've found? Or, and so, you know, first of all, where does the love of film come from? And secondly, is it important in marketing these days?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the love of film is very much a kept in the family kind of thing. My dad's a film journalist. My sister's a film journalist. So film is very much sort of part of my upbringing, and sort of weird films, wacky films, you know, not just your standard blockbuster fare. So I've really found an interest in that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, that kind of followed me into my degree. And how that came about. In terms of where this kind of interest in film has led into my professional career, I definitely agree that I think they're kind of intrinsically partnered to an extent, depending on your budget, of course. If you've got the budget to go all bells and whistles and make a high production TVC, or to really bring through really high quality polished ads that you're serving to your customers and to your key demographic, then fantastic. And of course you can bring for elements from film into that, but I think also, you know, some of the best campaigns that people remember are ones from brands which potentially don't have the biggest budget and aren't really trying to rock the world. They've just got a few highly polished key ideas that they managed to get across in a functional manner which speaks to their audience.
Yeah, I was going to say, just as you said that, there was a Christmas advert that came out the other week. Said it wasn't really a Christmas advert. It was it was following on all those on from all those big budget John Lewis adverts and the one with Elton John and all those kind of things. And then the guy that made that heartbreaking Christmas ad, $50 he made it for. And I think his name was Phil Beastall, Beastall. So I don't know if you saw that one, but that was, it's him listening to tapes of his mother recorded for him.
Oh wow! No, I haven't quite seen that one.
And he listens to, if you get a chance to Google it, his name's Phil Beastall. Everyone out there, go and watch it. He made it for $50. It's absolutely, you know, it'll make you cry. And if it doesn't make you cry, you're dead inside. So, those kind of powerful messages in films are, you know, I think that's one of the strongest mediums to get those across.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that you've touched on it with the John Lewis one is, I mean, Christmas, certainly in the UK, and I think also to an extent over here as well, it almost feels like its own film festival, sort of start of December, end of November. You've got all the big players coming through. Exactly. You've got this really low budget, very simple ad, very clear messaging that you just mentioned. And that's the one that's resonated with you rather than just another John Lewis advert, which probably cost a fair bit.
Yes, millions of dollars. So you mentioned back there that you're a fan of those weird and wacky films. So you're going to have to now tell us some of your, you know, maybe your top one, your top three, your top one films that we should all go and see.
Okay, sure. If we start sort of more sensible and go a bit more wacky, so there's probably my favorite film and the one I'll keep going back to isn't necessarily even very good, but the 2000 film Unbreakable with Bruce Willis and Samuel Jackson. Big fan of that one.
Okay, interesting. There's the sequel coming out.
Correct.
Soon, or it's not. It's a sequel of the sequel.
The whole point of films at the moment is you can't just have a film. You have to have a universe so you can build spin-offs and prequels and all this kind of stuff. And I think it's kind of intrinsically connected in some way through that. But yeah, we're talking, it'll be 19 years on by the time it's released. So that's probably my go-to should it be, you know, a rainy Sunday and you need to watch something. But if we want to go weird and wacky, there's a film called Afterlife. Came out in Japan in the early 90s. It's all about, it's kind of a mock documentary about angels recreating people's favorite moments from their lives so that they can continue to watch it on a really old beaten up VHS and take that into the afterlife. So if you want something a bit more poetic than Samuel Jackson and Bruce Willis punching things, then there's that one as well.
What about, all right, well, if we've asked you your best films, we ought to ask you what's your worst film. What's the film that you would switch off in a heartbeat?
Let me think. There's a film. I went to the Melbourne Film Festival back in August, and there was a film that had received such high praise from all corners of the globe called You Were Never Really There with Joaquin Phoenix. Right. And it was the most dreadful film I've ever seen in my entire life. So please do not watch that film.
Which is unusual for Joaquin Phoenix. He's made some good films as well.
Exactly. I so wanted to like it and I just couldn't. I felt like it was a failing on my part how much I disliked it, but I've come to the decision that no, it must be the film. It can't possibly be me.
I've switched off many films, but I only ever walked out on one film in a cinema.
Oh yeah, which one?
And that was Dude, Where's My Car? which I believe has Ashton Kutcher in it. It was a long time ago. Mm. I walked out of it. Mm-hmm. Ashton Kutcher and who's the guy who plays Steve Stifler?
Three part names: William Scott something or Scott William Murray something along those lines. I know who you're talking about.
Something. Here we go. Sean William Scott.
Oh, there we go. That was
three,
I think.
Yeah, go. Yeah, it's basically, I'll read the blurb. Jesse and Chester, two bumbling stoners, wake up one morning from a night of partying and cannot remember where they parked their car. Yeah, it's terrible. It's really bad. I still can't, it's only got 3 out of 5 stars on IMDb, so God knows how that happened. But anyway, yeah, look, I mean, look, I think film, video, obviously massively important part of anybody's marketing plan. You know, well, if you get the chance later on in life, I presume that you're looking at, you know, potentially getting involved in making films. Are you a writer? Are you a director? Are you a producer? Are you something else? What would get you excited?
I think, from a production standpoint, being able to, help in some way from a purely production standpoint. I don't think I have the discipline to be able to go away and take myself off for however many months to sort of write a full screenplay or something in the way. Yeah. I think that requires far more dedication and discipline that I could potentially lend myself to at this point. But
it does.
You know, if but also the marketing side of film, I think, excites me more than anything. Just the way that it now needs to sort of not just have posters and trailers, but you've now got to dedicate yourself to a whole variety. I mean, if you look at the Star Wars films, you can go into the supermarket and there'll be bananas with labeling on them, and they'll have R2-D2 in the labeling because, you know, Disney have funded the.
I haven't seen R2-D2 bananas yet, but that would be.
I'm sure they're out there. If not, then you know, Disney, if you're listening,
there's something they're missing there. If there isn't R2-D2 bananas, yeah. Okay.
Anyway, yeah. I think the film and film marketing for sure would be something I would potentially like to get into at some stage.
Yeah, I guess that tie-in and those merchandising has become, you know, pretty overt in the last, you know, probably the last 10 years.
Yes, precisely.
And I think the other thing I think that's really important now is that social media buzz that's created. So, you know, like what was it, 2-3 days ago, you get the last trailer for or the first trailer for the Avengers Endgame.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and that just goes across the internet like wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gets people excited about film.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, I think it was the most viewed YouTube video within 24 hours of all time.
Wow.
Within sort of 28, 48 hours after release, you've got people breaking down still by still. You've got trying to look for Easter eggs and little hints and tips and all this kind of thing. It's it's a real wave of publicity and sustained marketing. So it's not going to go away from them. It's not like that's it for Marvel and Avengers for the next 3 months until they release the new one and then it's the release of the film. It's like it's between now and release that they're going to have to be updating and teasing things. And yeah, it's a real project that starts from the moment they basically say yes to the film.
And the other thing I find interesting is even the small things like shots from the film, like stills or the poster itself, or that was it. Joaquin Phoenix is the new Joker, isn't he? Mm. And they showed some background behind the scenes shooting of the film of his new Joker character, and even that goes viral, and you know millions of people watch that, which it isn't even a trailer; it's just a snippet of someone behind the scenes in the film.
Yeah, precisely. And I think like that's even was implemented to combat the fact that people were trying to sneak onto set and get photos released and sort of to combat the social media that was coming out of it regardless. They thought, well, we may as well do it on our own terms. And yeah, like you say, it's a couple of seconds from behind the scenes stuff. And it's even today, it's still getting the views and still getting talked about. So yeah, it's a real dedication that needs to come in.
That's going to be a tough act to follow as well, Heath Ledger. That's that's one of the greatest movie villains I think out there. At least probably in the top five.
Yeah, precisely. And I think also with Jared Leto in Suicide Squad getting a less than favorable reaction, I think it kind of ramps that up as well. You've got to not only try and match Heath Ledger, which is no small feat, but then you've also got to deal with overcoming all the negative press of seeing another fellow actor, not necessarily failing, but not being perceived to be as good.
Yeah, going to be interesting. I still, the Avengers Endgame is the movie for me next year. I reluctantly have got dragged into the Avengers universe or the Marvel universe. And, it's a shame that I think the Sony deal won't be done in time for Deadpool to rescue the Avengers, but. Because I think that's what we all want to see. Anyway, okay. So let's talk about Taxi Box. Let's talk about that campaign.
Yes.
Look, just from our background, one of the things that I saw it on Facebook, and I took it, and we discussed it in the Spin Cycle on one of our earlier episodes, and it was you guys promoting your one-star reviews. And the caption was, if I might get this wrong, you can correct me. It's we find the one star review so you don't have to, or something along those lines.
Yeah, no, that's the ones, that, or, you know, we found the juicy one star reviews and they're not even that exciting.
Oh, right. Cool. Tell me how that all came about. Where did that sort of come from?
Yeah, certainly. So as you mentioned on your show, It kind of came about as a result of the current trend that reviews play as such a huge part of our purchasing decisions, you know, as well as our other life choices at the moment. So, you know, I've gone for drinks with friends and they've decided, you know, not to have another one in case their Uber driver thinks that they're drunk and gives them a lower score. So these reviews, whether it's you receiving them or you sort of doling them out, they're playing such a huge part at the moment. And I don't think as a business you can really afford not to take your reviews seriously. We're very lucky, well, I say lucky, but to our core, our business is really quite customer obsessed, and giving good service really comes out of it. So with our more positive reviews, you'll see a number of them actually not only mention their Taxi Box driver is, you know, doing an excellent job, but they'll actually mention them by name, which I think is, you know, quite a refreshing change for the industry, which for storage has a bit of a reputation for being unpleasant, difficult to work with, you know, not on time, not there when you need them, bit of a letdown. So when you'll see in our positive reviews, we're really quite good that we have this coming through. But we do take our reviews very seriously, especially the negative ones. So if we do get these notifications coming through that we've got a anything less than, say, a 4 or 5 star review, then we'll look to respond and get one of the guys on the phones to follow up and basically find out what happened, what went wrong, how we can look to resolve it and get things working for the customer. And basically make sure that they're walking away without having this sort of bad feeling in their mouth.
I was going to say a couple of things that come out of that. Essentially, and that's, you know, I think that customer service, you know, approach, obviously, you know, to be commended. But it's something fairly standard that all businesses really should be doing. But, that's one. But the second thing is, I think you're kind of taking the piss out of people who write 1-star reviews, aren't you?
To an extent, I would say that we definitely want to be shown that we're self-aware of these reviews and the people that are writing these reviews, but without ever sort of becoming spiteful. You know, these are our customers at the end of the day. But
when we I understand that you have to be diplomatic in saying that. But when you look at the one that we shared on Instagram, it kind of goes. The insinuation in the ad is that people who write 1-star reviews can be somewhat pedantic. And certainly, like, I requested 10 packing blankets for my boxes. The truck driver delivering the boxes only had 9. To write a 1-star review with something that is a minor inconvenience would suggest that that person is
right. Well,
at least that's what I get out of it. I'm not saying everybody gets
definition,
that.
By definition.
But that's why I kind of find it so funny.
We should be getting 4.5 stars for that one, right? If it's only 9 out of 10.
So, oh, absolutely. Yeah. You should be getting, absolutely.
You know, with that one in particular, we really felt like that one was one where it kind of, where the time of night that it comes through and the content of the review, and we're basically thinking, you know what, this is, without wanting to make too many assumptions, written very much in the sort of spur of the moment, very reactive to something, you know.
Yes.
if they're storing or moving, it can definitely be a stressful period for them, and you know, sounds like we definitely have slipped up, potentially very marginally compared to the reaction of the review. But there was something that we did resolve. Just to clarify, that one we did resolve for the customer and basically made them happy. But the fact that this lasting 1-star review is now what, say, you or I, if we were to come and decide we needed storage, you're now going to look at this and think, oh, you know what? Maybe they're not all they're cracked up to be. And that lasting impact is really what we wanted to present and highlight, that, you know, if you're looking at our reviews, you're looking at our service, please, you know, just kind of take these with a pinch of salt, that we have, you know, done all we can to help people. It's a very public space now that we deal with for marketing.
Yeah, absolutely.
With social media and with reviews, I think the more and more marketing is now trying to bridge the gap with business and customer as much as possible, but that's a two-way street. So it now means that people are coming back to you on Facebook with comments, and people are coming back to you with reviews, and it's a very public domain in which you now communicate with them, not just customer service but also marketing. And you know, we'll come back and we'll respond to these reviews, and we'll look to follow up and look after them as much as possible. But I am not going to run on the assumption that everyone's spending as much time reading the context as they are just looking at the number of reviews.
It's interesting because I remember a while back somebody writing a review for Domino's on Facebook, and it went viral, and they'd made the criticism that Domino's had left the mushroom off a pizza, or they put mushroom on a pizza, or they'd done something to a pizza that wasn't what the person had ordered. And the review that they wrote on Facebook was suggesting that this failure in the correct construction of the pizza had resulted in an absolute disastrous night day, week, month, year. It was like the worst. Yeah, it was the worst thing that had ever happened to them in their life, that someone had made a mistake on their pizza. And that's why I laughed at the taxi box thing, because I go, people who have a one-star experience. The other one that I think of is when people write one-star reviews on TripAdvisor because a single thing went wrong on their holiday. What they don't do is they don't sit there and look at that mistake or problem in context of their entire holiday. They just see the one thing that went wrong and then give somebody a one-star review. And that, to me, is the problem with reviews in general and this social affirmation of reviews, is that people can write one star reviews based on the most minuscule and pointless thing that happened to them that they think is obviously huge, but in the great scheme of things isn't.
And
that's what I got from your adverts, was that people who write one stars reviews, not that they shouldn't be taken seriously, but that they may be exaggerating to a certain degree.
Yes, no, absolutely.
And maybe that's not where you were going with that, anyway.
I think with your example there with TripAdvisor especially, which are quite anecdotal reviews that come through, and you've got to think to yourself, these are the people writing the best example of themselves in these stories, and there's still that kind of lingering, well, actually, it sounds like you were, you know, you potentially were in the wrong here, and it wasn't necessarily the hotel or the travel agent's fault. Yeah, and you're thinking, if you're still coming away with that, then what really happened? So that's kind of, we want it to be playful. We're quite self-aware with how we communicate with our customers. We know our audience, we know what they're after. And so we thought this would be quite a fun way to kind of play with that.
And when you had that idea, then what happened? Was that, I think you said before we started talking that you took it to an agency and they kind of made it come alive. What was the process from past the idea?
The creative came to us, one of those typical over the beer scenarios where we're getting these reviews going through. We've kind of, with this one in particular, this was kind of like, oh, where do we go from here? And it's just like, how do we turn this one around and really prove that we've gone above and beyond and maybe that we actually need to take a step back and really stand by what we're doing here and the service we're offering. So it kind of came up as, you know what, why don't we kind of present to people who we are and really give them an insight as our business, and then it's something they're going to come away with. So we came up with that, and then we had at the time we had a social media agency, so we basically said, look, this is creative, can you kind of push this out? And they did the legwork purely in terms of just finding the right audience that kind of going to get this. Because it is a bit of a, I don't know if you have the term, maybe I should say Vegemite instead of Marmite, but some people love it, some people hate it. So the creative was on our side and coming up with the particular review. Also want to confirm we did change the name of the customer just purely from a, you know, there's enough people out there that can, do enough digging to try and make that experience unpleasant for the person that left the review, which is definitely not what we want to do.
And just the last question on that was, what channels did you guys, I mean, obviously I saw it on Facebook. What else did you do with it? Did it go anywhere else?
That was purely where we wanted to put it. It's social media for Facebook and Instagram. We actually gave a couple of different concepts to the ad agency at the time. We said, look, we've got these creatives, one, you know, very positive, one talks about the advantages of taxi box, and then we've also got this negative review that we want you to push out as well. And the negative review, likely as you probably saw when you came across the ads, got by far the most traction, by far the most engagement with people, because they were just so much in disbelief as to the rationale behind why someone would leave such a negative review for such a small problem. So when we found this, we were purely pushing out to people on a sort of acquisition front, so those that hadn't necessarily even heard of TaxBlocks before. So we actually had to make a decision as to whether do we want to keep plugging this away. This is the one that's sitting with people the most, but do we actually want this negative review to be the first time they've heard of TaxBlocks? But it's actually coming into its own and giving us some really strong engagement and increased our brand awareness to a fair amount of extent. Cool. But yeah, no, purely Facebook and Instagram, which we felt was the right audience for this kind of thing.
Is there any other plans to take it sort of bigger, billboards or video, or start creating video or anything beyond that? Or
well, I mean, obviously, we don't get too many negative reviews coming through because we're such a great business. And also, when we do, the ones that we do follow up with, and you know, 9 times out of 10, the customer updates the review. So, in all honesty, we only really trialed this with this one review, which really stuck with us. So, like I say, we wanted to be self-aware, but we also didn't want to bring it too much in a try-hard. I feel like if we do it in a billboard capacity, it's not one that necessarily lives long with this kind of thing. I can't imagine, say, in 12 months' time, we'll still be running the same ad, still complaining about Karen and her one-star review. I don't think it has the same kind of longevity.
Yeah,
it's quite clever, and I do enjoy, a good billboard that's very self-aware and quite tongue-in-cheek. I know the koala one where they made fun of the IKEA boarding. We enjoy quite a bit, and I know they followed that one out with quite a funny handwritten coupon code off the back of it. So you know, that's one where. It's worked for them.
Cool. There's one last question I'm going to ask you, and this is something that you said about 10 minutes ago. Your friends being careful that they're not too drunk in Uber for fear of getting a low score from the driver. Tell me, is that, because I haven't been, it's not that I've stopped drinking willingly. I haven't had a drink for a while, but is that a real thing? People are actually doing that?
I mean, I know, yeah, there's this one example. I don't know whether it's the mainstream yet, but it's part of this whole, I don't know, Black Mirror life that we have now where, where everyone's taking these reviews on face value. I've had genuine texts from people being like, oh, no, my Uber rating's gone down. How has this happened? I was a delight in my Uber. How can they possibly be reviewed?
I was a delight.
Which is, again, another example. Maybe the drivers, you know, just had a bad day. Maybe the last guy was annoying, falling.
I was going to say, because China are introducing, I think it's China, are introducing that social credit system where you'll get scores based on your behavior. And, you know, and if you do something negative, your score goes down. And essentially what China are doing is just amalgamating all those reviews that you get on, you know, various social platforms and putting them all together and giving you a one-off score, which on the face of it, you go, it doesn't sound too bad because, you know, that's, you know, if someone gets into your Uber or someone wants you to come out to their house and fix something and you look at the thing and they're an asshole, you just go, well, I don't really want to do that. But I guess there's a fear that your entire life could be upended and if all of a sudden you get too many bad reviews. But
yeah, no, that's absolutely true. I guess there's positives and negatives to both of that side. On the one hand, you feel like if a company is really taking the piss with something and there's far less of a chance of them getting away with that because you now have these tools at your disposal to publicly shame them and make them pay. Yeah. On the other side of that, I'll never forget the time a friend tweeted to the food company Tesco complaining that they found a screw in their pizza and couldn't believe how this could happen and completely outraged that the customer service hadn't got back to them. But an hour later, they realized that the screw actually came from their own pizza cutter. And they didn't bother to mention the update to Tesco. So that tweet is now just sitting on Tesco's page, this outrage, was completely of their own doing. So, yeah, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Last three questions. What are some of the brands that you admire out there? Some of the things that you've you buy frequently or so on and so forth, that kind of thing?
Yeah, sure. So one of the larger tasks I've done since I've joined Taxibox was actually determining brand guidelines and who our audience is and how we should message to them. And as part of that, we've actually come up with things we quite like from other either individual campaigns from other businesses or, you know, for example, that koala satirical billboard was quite funny. The Airtasker Like a Boss campaign, which I think actually has now been taken down because of legal dispute. Right. But we quite enjoyed that just for its lightheartedness.
Yeah.
MailChimp have a game on the Fast Five game, which you can only play after you've sent like a campaign. It's quite relatively hidden as a bit of an Easter egg, which we quite, you know, we found quite engaging. We actually have our own game on our own site. It's kind of our own take on Tetris called Taxi Blocks, where people can get money off the taxi box just by playing the game. So as a marketing tool, it's quite fun in that there isn't really a benefit to us having this feature and, you know, the cost of actually building a game and putting it on your site. But people really enjoy it and they talk about it and they tell their friends. Yeah. It's got a real bit of fun for us, which was something we're keen to bring into the less than exciting world of storage.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I think those individual kind of lighthearted, fun add-ons, it clearly shows that the businesses have thought about their audience and thought about, giving their service a bit of liveliness and fun. I'd also say coming from the UK, where, films, games, music, it's all digital and retailers are no longer selling physical copies, and those that were are now closing down in droves. So the fact that JB Hi-Fi coming over here for the last 12 months or have been here, it's still running very successfully and being this unapologetically old-fashioned, you know, where they're still handwriting the prices, the big neon cardboard, and it feels very 1990s. Yeah. It's an interesting approach to kind of stick to your guns like
that. Yeah, it does. Yeah. I'm kind of this whole JB Hi-Fi thing, a bit of a love-hate relationship there. I enjoy going in there. Do you know what? It's weird. I enjoy walking in there and then I kind of go, this is just frustrating me. Now I can't find, I don't know why I came. It's a bit of a, it's a bit of a challenge, that one. Yeah. Okay. All right. Second to last question. What's, what's next for you? What's 2019 got in store for you?
2019. Well, I've been at the business for 8 months so far. I originally came in as the marketing coordinator before moving into my new role for marketing manager. So my two large projects so far have been one, the brand guidelines I mentioned, and also actual kind of data reporting and analytics and attribution reporting. So 2019 for me is basically taking those two, combining them and really bringing out some engaging audience campaigns, which really sort of see the traffic coming through to our site and the leads that you would expect to come from that. We are revamping our videos that we have on our site at the moment as well, which is an exciting project for us. There's a whole host of videos that we have that kind of explain the product and how it works and basically try and make the service as seamless as possible for our customers. We've got new products that we're bringing out from the tech side. So we have, as of last Friday, we now have a really cool storage calculator where you can basically add all the items that you have in your home and it will tell you how best to pack your taxi box and how many taxi boxes you need. It's very interactive and quite fun. So being able to bring that through into our branding and communication is really good. We have live driver tracking, very similar to what you'd have with Uber or Uber Eats as well. So there's tech coming out in 2019, which I'm really keen to basically bring out to the masses and expose through various systems. We ran a TVC campaign towards the middle of the year as well, and we saw that there was a startling increase in our brand awareness as well. It was in Brisbane. And we then ran a series of surveys to see who'd heard of Taxibox for our target audience. And just the uplift was really phenomenal, which is really encouraging to see as well. Mm. So keen to kind of bring through and follow up on that as well.
Cool. Last question. If anybody wants to get hold of you, if they want to ask you a question or whatever they might just want to, they might have gone to Southampton University at the same time as you and me, but what's the best way of getting hold of you? Where's the easiest place to find you?
Well, they can either come through to us if they want to chat all things Taxibox and have a look at our one-star reviews. We're at Taxibox Storage for Facebook and Instagram. We don't actually use Lowe's Twitter just because it doesn't necessarily fit in with our target demographic as much. But those are the best ones, so at Taxibox Storage. Whereas if you just want to chat Southampton Uni, then it's Josh_Webb100.
Well, mate, it's been fantastic having you on the show, and it's nice to have another Southampton alumni to talk to. look, wish you all the best for Christmas and the new year, and thank you very much for being on the show.
Not a problem. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.